Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Please welcome the only person that I would drag two cartons of lemonade over an international border and through three states on a Greyhound bus for. Would you please welcome the one true LP, Lyndon Perry? Are you there, Lyndon?
I am in your neighborhood, Rai.
You are in my neighborhood. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. This is a lot of fun to be on the other side of a podcast conversation with you. It's amazing.
Yeah. I get nervous sometimes, but I'm sure we'll talk through that. I'm very shy. I'm a very shy person by nature. So I tend to, you know,
that so comes across from the first moment I met you. I was like, this is a shy guy right here.
Yeah. He's very, very quiet, keeps to himself. You know, that's what everybody says about me these days. So it's funny how that works. And everybody, it's great because everybody's keeping to themselves right now by law.
So it's by all, law,
it's all good.
Or either law or common sense. In some cases, they're if they aren't using their common sense, they're out there in droves, which is not a good thing.
Out at the beach, all that fun stuff. Now, again, I there's only one person that I would drag lemonade over all those places on a Greyhound bus. I love reminding myself of that story and going, you know, there was a better way, right? You could have done it so much better.
Buy local.
In Chicago. And I think you know this. I gave away some lemonade to some guys that were living at the bus station. And I don't know.
I think you told me this.
I don't know if that was a blessing or a curse, because who wants really tart lemonade when you're hungry?
There's somebody out there
still cursing my name, I'm sure. So
if you had to do it all over again, you would get to the destination first and then buy the
lemonade. Yes. And then or petition a company or get a sponsor locally that would not require me. I love the story because I did it. It was the craziest thing. And in a time, especially now, when taking any kind of liquids across the border is is taboo, to say the least.
Not gonna happen.
Yeah. I took lots of liquid over the border and had no problem getting through. So it's all good.
Different times.
Oh man, when I was a kid, I remember those days when you could take lemonade across the border and not get stopped and harassed.
We walked uphill both ways with lemonade
in both hands.
Well, I want to go on record as saying thank you very much for the effort that you made to make that cornerstone experience what it was.
Well, that's why I keep bringing it up, so that there's always a reminder in case you forget any value that I have, because you know over the years my value has waned, but I always bring that story up so that you're reminded. I sledged through the snow to get.
You're like, wait a minute, Lyndon. LP owes me something here. Yes. Hey, let me remind you about what I did
by the way,
for you.
Yes.
It involves lemonade, borders, buses.
And it was July, so it was super hot in Illinois. Super hot in Illinois, but in Canada there was snow, because there's always snow in Canada, according to what most people think about Canada. So I sledged that through.
Yeah, you kept it cool in your igloo until you were ready to embark on your journey. You got the sled dogs out
and made my way over. The Greyhounds.
Went to the border,
I'm just realizing the significance of taking a Greyhound to work a leader dog show. How cool is that? I love it when it comes together like that.
It's all going according
I try to not plan. To think very often, but sometimes you can't help it.
It comes in handy.
Where exactly are you?
Yes.
Geographically.
So geographically, yes. On the maps.
On the Googles.
On the Googles maps. I am in Milwaukee.
Yes.
In Wisconsin. It's a good 90-minute jaunt from north from Chicago. Right on the ocean of the Midwest, which is Lake Michigan. And I absolutely love it. I love this market. I was in Chicago for a year. And really part of my drive around going to Chicago was because I wanted to both be inspired and try to maybe work my way into the music scene. And then I started coming up here. And honestly, the music scene up here is just as vibrant and yet accessible and get aroundable, which is a word that we use here. So,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a smart word.
That is a very smart word. Because it's true. You got to be able to get around. I would think.
Hang on there. I think I just lost you. Oh, now you're back. There you are. Thank you, Zencaster.
I am back. Yeah, no. Thank you so much.
We love you,
Zencaster. We love you. What would you recommend if somebody was looking at Milwaukee to relocate or was wanting to check it out? What was the draw or what is a draw for people that want to move to Milwaukee?
I never really had Milwaukee on my radar. You know, my kids were born in Michigan, so I of course thought of Detroit, and I've thought of obviously Chicago. If you're not on one of the coasts and you want to be in the largest market, not on the coast, you go to Chicago. We would always go to Chicago for either sporting events or to go see shows. But a lady friend of mine was in Milwaukee. And so I started to come up to visit and realized that it really feels like a slice of Chicago. And I know that the Milwaukeeans would probably hate hearing this because it's like, no, this is, we're our own entity.
We are,
it's a large, metropolitan market in the Midwest. So it feels a lot like Chicago in that way. It's right on the Lake Michigan. So it feels like Chicago in that way.
Right. Yeah.
But also it's again, just to go four or five miles to the next restaurant or brewery you want to go to you hop in your car and you go right to, 10 minutes later, you're there and you're parking usually for free. Whereas in Chicago, everything is, measured not in distance, but in hours that it takes you to get there.
Got it.
And I love that. Like if you know that and you live there and you build that into your life, or your schedule, I guess I should say, then you're cool with it. But then when you do get to get out and be in a city that still looks and feels a lot like Chicago, and yet it is so accessible, you can get around. That's a bonus. And then it's a great foodie town. There's a lot of Midwestern values here, which I have grown to appreciate. Didn't used to, but I understand it now a little bit better, being a little bit further along in my years. And breweries have kind of become the new corner pub here. There are so many microbrews, and the thing I love about this particular market is actually a couple things. As it pertains to breweries, one is they put so much emphasis and they have a high standard for design. And I have a design background. With a few exceptions, and I mean, there are probably 20, 30 microbrews in Milwaukee proper. With a few exceptions, the design and the marketing and the logos and the merch that they create are the type of thing that you'd be proud to wear. And the second thing is they don't really seem to be in competition with each other. In fact, there are sort of coalitions of breweries working together, especially now during the pandemic, to help each other out and to promote each other. They'll get on Instagram and do like live shows every night and feature a brewer from another brewery. And they work together. They help each other out. They trade secrets. And, there's something to be said about that I just thoroughly enjoy. I have done a little bit of history of Milwaukee, of course, having lived here, and I've launched a podcast to try to understand it better and to meet the people. And back in the day, this is where Pabst was located.
Right.
And, yeah. And it, which right. was a, it was was a behemoth here. They've since moved out. And then Miller Coors came in. Miller first, and then I think Coors Molson bought them. So now it's mostly Coors Molson, but Miller's still here and still produced here. And so for years and years, when the rest of the country was starting to take off with craft microbrews, in Milwaukee, it still wasn't really happening. There was one or two, like from like the late 80s, early 90s on. But then you get to about 2008, 9, 10, right around then, and all of a sudden they just start blooming everywhere. And I think people realized, yeah, Miller's here, but there's also a huge market for beer. Yeah.
It's wide open. It's wide open. We're not going to be cutting each other's throats to make it ahead, because we can all coexist and do well.
And actually, I think it almost you're right. Like. It's almost like the coffee shop or the coffee house sort of trend that happened late 90s, early 2000s. You would think, right. Okay, there's already a craft coffee house in town. We probably shouldn't launch another. But the opposite is actually true, because one opens and then they realize, oh, there's a market here. And so people like to have that choice.
Exactly.
And they're more apt to go get craft beer, you know, pretty much every day of the week around here because you can. Right. Whereas before, and nothing against the Miller High Life. I mean, it's the champagne of beers and I enjoy one now and again, but you get to bolster that now with all these microbreweries. And because there's so many, they get to experiment more and try really oddball flavors and recipes that you probably wouldn't get if they were the only one in town, because everybody would want just the right. standard, you know, I want a lager, I want a pilsner, I want an IPA and a porter. And so it's interesting because the older microbrews in town kind of have that. They have their mainstay beers, but the brand new ones are almost like a petri dish or a toy box for the newer brewers, because they don't have to serve up the standards because somebody else down the street's doing it.
And now, does each microbrewery have its own character, its own kind of personality, or
generally speaking? Yeah. Almost every tap room kind of has its own vibe. You've got everything from something that feels like your uncle's garage, where they literally open the garage door and they'll have like a huge, large, screen TV playing a Brewers game and picnic tables and a popcorn machine all the way to
nice touch.
Yeah, absolutely. All the way to pretty large, well-done industrial kind of feeling gathering rooms or spaces for people to come together. And, you know, a lot of them offer food as well. And in some cases, the food has almost become the thing, like it's as much as their beer.
Yeah.
In fact, Lakefront Brewery, which is one of the oldest small breweries, and they're not really small anymore, their cheese curds are the best in town. And by the way, I don't know if everybody knows what that is. Just Google it. But and fish fries.
I'm Canadian, so I know what
cheese curds are for sure. So we don't have to spend time.
We put gravy on those.
Yeah. So anyway, the point is there is something about a Midwestern town. And there's definitely a value there that seems to be shared even across like St. Louis, Chicago, Indianapolis, Milwaukee, that sort of thing. But also it really feels like, and I haven't been to a lot of markets long enough to know this for sure, but it feels like there's a lot of pride and local pride and not this sort of fierce competition going on, that people wanting to help each other grow and prosper here. And that's something I can get behind. So I've absolutely fallen in love with this city. And I mean, you know, so much so that.
And are the tap rooms a great. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say so much so that I launched a podcast and interview people who make Milwaukee look, sound, and taste great. And that has been just a lot of fun.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What's the name of the podcast?
That is MKE Love. And MKE, just because that's what they call it up here. You know, it's the, it probably started with the airport. You know, MKE is the airport code.
The designation.
But everything around here is, it seems like MKE is tacked onto to a lot of things, like this, this bakery, MKE.com, for example, you know.
So MKE Love just makes sense. It's a great play on words. Absolutely. So we'll make sure that people can find that and link up to that. Absolutely. Do you, now the tap rooms, is there a live music scene? Do a lot of them, you know, have bands and artists coming in to play on a regular basis?
And so this is a good question and you didn't even know. but when I was in the Central Illinois area, there are some artists that are independent and original, but for the most part, there's not very many venues for people to play. So
for
usually if you're a musician in that area, you're either in a cover band or you're not gigging. So one of the reasons I loved when, you know, back in the early 90s, moved up to Flint, Michigan, and it seemed like Detroit, Pontiac, Ann Arbor, Flint, all those places, you could go to a club and see a 45-minute set of of all originals, which was so refreshing.
Stuff you'd never
So of course, that's one of the reasons I wanted to go to Chicago. I don't want to go. By the way, this is not to throw any shade at a cover band, because I have a tremendous amount of respect for those musicians. I'm just saying, I don't want to go to see somebody play somebody else's song. I'm just not. That's not a driver for me.
For me, I like it when it's incorporated into a set, but I don't. I don't want to hear a whole night of covers.
And by the way, I love covers. Absolutely love them when the artist that's covering is sounding like themselves. So and not trying to emulate the exact sound that's on the record. So
we have this artist in town in Windsor. She goes by Flower Face. And I saw her at Record Store Day 2 years ago. And as I was leaving, it was one of those things where it's like, I'm not leaving till her set's done. And they were doing like 20-minute sets. And I said, I'm not leaving until her set's done. Cause it was the two piece and it was great. And she ended with a cover of Ain't No Sunshine. And it was like, wow,
I would love that.
Totally, like, as you said, it sounded like her. It didn't sound like the original. It sounded like her doing her take on that. And so a couple months ago, I dropped her a note and said, hey, by the way, I heard you do this live. Have you recorded that? And she said, no, but I'm thinking about it. And then about 2 weeks ago, she sent me a message, said, thanks for asking about that. I've recorded it last week and it's available now on iTunes.
That's so cool.
So I will make sure you get that for sure. Cause it's a great cover, but as you said, it's her take on it. It's not, you know, trying to copy the original. I agree. I do love covers when the band or the artist makes it their own. For sure.
Yeah.
Chris Cornell's Billie Jean.
Yes. So good. Oh my gosh.
So good. So
and
good.
Very different takes on the same, same song. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Not even comparable really, but both beautiful. And I would have both in a playlist. I love them both, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. The what you were saying about the collaboration, about the partnerships within the city. I wrote this about 2 weeks ago. I said, I love going into a city that is known for collaboration. And I find personally, and again, it's because I'm old, I can visit a city and I can know within about an hour what kind of a city it is.
Yeah.
And I remember early days of going to Nashville. Nashville has always been, LA is generally known for competition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everybody's in a band and everybody's clamoring to get to the top. Nashville's always been different in flavor because it's a city that's more known for collaboration, songwriting, partnerships, and all that kind of stuff. And it still feels that way. I was there 2 years ago. It still feels like a city of collaboration. But about 8 years ago, we were there with some friends, and they were saying things like, people are starting to figure out that Nashville is here. Like we've been able to kind of stay under the radar for a lot of years. People just assumed it was just country music, and that kept us kind of hidden under the bubble for a long time. But so it was about 8 years ago, and they said, we're now realizing that people are realizing Nashville is a great place to live. The suburbs are a great place to go. And the scene is here for sure. So that certainly colored it to some degree. When we were there 2 years ago, there were a lot of like bachelorette parties there. Still music all day, which is great, but the tone of the city has changed a little bit. It hasn't gone away, but I love a city of collaboration. And there's so many cities that I've gone to when I'm there and I feel like, nope, there's no collaboration here. Everybody's in it for themselves and nobody wants to help anybody at all. And that I just don't gravitate towards that at all. So I find it very refreshing to hear that Milwaukee is a city of collaboration.
Yeah. So I've got more to say about that, but you know, to reflect on what you just said, I think it like LA is kind of, the music destination like Hollywood is for actors and actresses.
Right.
And bands would come from not LA and they would go to LA because there's deals to be had because that's where the people are that are cutting those deals. And so like, I understand the competition. I don't like it either, by the way. And you know, and I don't necessarily think that that's a Midwestern versus sort of coastal cultural difference,
right.
But
no, LA's worth checking out, period. It's got a whole vibe that's different than anywhere else.
And not far out of LA, by the way, which I discovered by listening to the Deconstruction podcast with Mikey Bridges, is that, you know, you've got Orange County, I think it's Orange County, that he was saying that this is where a lot of musicians would hop from band to band and be in several bands together.
Yes, absolutely.
So very collaborative. Yeah. But yeah, Milwaukee, to get back to that, a couple things. There's a lot of colleges up here, of course, so there's young musicians. But also there is a local radio station that is community supported, and they once an hour will play a Milwaukee band. And even when I was in Chicago, I actually sought that out. I was trying to find out where, you know, if I start publishing things, which local radio station.
What's the outlet?
Not there. Just not there. There's not even an hour show or a half hour show in a given week for local bands to get love in Chicago. And so this, and by the way, this radio station, 88.9, they're not the only one to play local music, but they not only do play that, like I said, one song per hour from a Milwaukee band, but they also have kind of this little venue off to the side of their station, which, by the way, is not little or it's a beautiful venue. It's really well done. Right. It's really cozy. But it's they have bands come in on Thursdays back when you could do that. There's this thing, Ryan, called venues where people go to play live music. I don't know if you remember this.
I've got a DeLorean. Let me see if I remember. All the way back in 2019,
yes,
I remember there were these things called venues where people played music.
You would buy live a ticket. You would go see the band or bands. Right. Sometimes bands. Yeah.
But multiple bands, you say.
But when there's no pandemic, they have bands come in on Thursdays.
Could I get a sarsaparilla there too as well?
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Always on tap in Milwaukee.
A phosphate.
Or a ginger beer.
Yes.
Good. But yeah, there's,
that's good to know.
There are so many places in town that have open mic nights that I'm discovering. But people just,
that's awesome.
They take a pride, which, you know, I'm sure this exists in other cities like Chicago, but there's something to be said about a city that will say, hey, this is an artist and they're from Milwaukee and we're going to get behind them. You know, and I mean, I know a lot of areas have their own sports teams and they are rabid fans, but I have never seen anybody like the culture of the Green Bay Packers fans up here. The Brewers have a strong following around here. And the Bucks, even though they sucked for years and years and years, and I would have never paid attention to the Bucks, but now they're a championship team. So
stuff's happening.
And
it's popping.
It's a good time to be here.
Nice.
They have built the city up around the river, the river walk that leads out to the ocean, Lake Michigan. And there's a lot of really cool boutique shops and boutique restaurants and the craft beer stuff I was talking about earlier, and distilleries. It's just, I enjoy it. It's a great
thriving
place to be. And like I said, you can get around very quickly and park very easily. And so I'm all in.
Yeah. Now, for those of you that don't know, Lyndon and I have quite a history. He is the one true LP, and I am the one true manager of Leader Dogs for the Blind. Let there be no mistake about that. And so we have a history with Leader Dogs for the Blind, and there are so many stories that have come up just in the last couple of years about the band and how we did some stuff. They are all available on the Cheap Flight podcast. So you're going to want to check that out. We'll make sure there's a link for that, that people can find Cheap Flight, because that there's so much history in what we were able to do with Leader Dogs and the fun we had and the connection that we have with you and me and Jeff and Derek. So that's all available on the Cheap Flight podcast. But one of the things that really, when we started talking management, and I had heard the Leader Dogs project before. And as much as I love the music on the Leader Dogs record, which I do, I was just probably 50-50 equally drawn by the lyrics on the Leader Dogs record as I was. And your skill as a songwriter certainly was something that made me say, I could get in this business. I could get in the business of Leader Dogs because I was so drawn. We can talk about that maybe after the break, but it was your songwriting combined with the music that made me want to work with you guys. And so it's interesting as a songwriter, it sounds like what you're saying is that Milwaukee is a great place for a songwriter.
It really is. Yeah, it really is.
Which you are. Absolutely. So maybe let's take a quick break and hear from a sponsor, and then we'll get right back to it.
Love it.
Everybody have fun tonight. Everybody Wing Chun tonight. It'll actually take me less time to explain the benefits of using Anchor to start your podcast. So let's go with that. Anchor is absolutely the easiest way to start and manage your own podcast. Download it from your app store, launch the app, and Anchor will guide you through the steps necessary to get all set up. You'll be up and running within a few minutes. Also, check this out. Anchor is absolutely free, both the app and the service. And they do really all of the heavy lifting for you by distributing your podcast to all the major networks. And check this out. You can actually even make money on your podcast. So again, it's dead simple and absolutely free. Get out to your app store now and download the Anchor app. Or go to anchor.fm on your laptop or desktop browser, and you can get signed up and started there. We know you've got some extra time on your hands, so get out there, get yourself that Anchor app. Oh, and hey, look up our show, Cheap Flight, in the Discover section of the app. Leave us a voice message, and we'll mention your podcast on the show.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
And we are back with the one true LP, Lyndon Perry, talking about being in a city of collaboration, being a city where live music is celebrated. That is so exciting to hear, certainly for you and for what you do, for what your craft is.
Absolutely. And there's been some, by the way, I forgot to mention, there's been some great bands that have come out of Milwaukee, and you know, including like the Violent Femmes. And so I mean, there's a nice history, and there's a nice, you know, R&B scene here, jazz scene, love the jazz scene around here. Mm-hmm. Blues are, it's heavily respected, and there's a really great underground hip hop scene that's happening too. So it's a lot of fun to be a part of.
So how does that help you in what you're pursuing?
Well, it's kind of like we were talking about with Nashville. It feels like there are a number of people who understand each other. It's hard to go into an environment where nobody is doing what you're doing at all and say, first of all, hey, look at what I'm doing.
Sell them on the concept.
Yeah, look at what I'm doing and come out and support me. It feeds itself. It's an ecosystem that feeds itself. So where there are boutique restaurants, there are people who care about quality, and they're going to go to quality shows, and they're going to go to quality breweries and restaurants and so on and so forth. So where there is artistry happening, in this case, we're talking about in the music scene, there starts to build an ecosystem around it. And like I said before, there's a radio station that supports that and gets behind it. There's promoters locally that get behind it. There are small venues and large venues that get behind it. And so as that grows, and by the way, one of the largest music festivals in the world is right here in Milwaukee called Summerfest. And that just, it just breeds more of itself. It just continues to I don't want to say fester, that's not a good word, but it just right. It just perpetuates itself, and right. People come to these markets to be inspired to do the things that are already happening in those markets. I didn't come here to start the music industry. It's like it's burgeoning, and I want to come be a part of this thing that's already living and contribute to the conversation.
Absolutely. And really, for anyone, how is anybody going to get better at anything unless you just play out and play out and play out? I remember as a kid being fascinated. There was a TV movie about the Beatles, and you know, I was starting to play guitar a little bit, but I was starting to appreciate the Beatles. And so I watched this TV movie. I couldn't find it now for the life of me, but it was like a 2-hour thing, and it spent the first hour in Germany. And they played, it's burned into my head, the Kaiser Keller. And they would play the Kaiser Keller bar three sets a night or four sets a night. And they did that for a couple of years. So, you know, when you think of the, in the late 50s, so you think of the Beatles and you go, yeah, the Beatles, prolific. There's very few songs are considered to be throwaway Beatles songs out of hundreds of songs. You listen to something like Something or Get Back or any of those, like there's not a lot of throwaway garbage Beatles songs. And you think, man, they were just so prolific. They just cranked this stuff out. But the only reason they cranked this stuff out is because they spent a couple of years in Germany for crowds that probably hated what they were doing, weren't into them, and they figured out who they were. So they put in their hours to become excellent. And you need a city like that or a supportive community like that that gives you the opportunity to get your hours.
Totally agree. Absolutely. Would you agree? And then what ends up happening is little by little, a buzz starts to build, and one person will go to work the next day and say, man, you should go check out this band. They're called the Beatles, you know? Or somebody will bring it up in conversation. Like I'm, you know, looking for something to do this weekend, or even say, hey, I really like this, I don't know, album by whoever, Chuck Berry. And then somebody would say, oh, you like Chuck Berry? Well, you should go check out this band called the Beatles at such and such a place. And again, you know, it's inspiration perpetuates itself.
Right.
And, you know, when there's young people coming to a club to see local music and they see that these are real people, they, like I said in an interview yesterday, they literally like put ketchup on their fries, just like all of us do.
Sure,
and they order a beer. And then the reality hits that, hey, I could do this. Like, this is accessible to me. I could go get a guitar at a pawn shop. Yeah. I could take a few lessons. And in a couple of months, I could actually be up there doing this thing. And probably hundreds of people have that thought, and only probably a couple dozen actually act on
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yep.
But without the inspiration up there for them, it doesn't seem accessible or within reach.
Do you remember who that was for you?
You know, I do. You're going to, I don't know if you and I have ever talked about this.
No. This is therapy. Now's the time.
Yes. Well, okay. So a couple of things come to mind. So it's all flooding to me right now. When I was a little boy, I was at a Nazarene church, and at especially this particular Nazarene church, but Nazarene tends to be in this flavor from my experience anyway, not very interested in emulating the world, which is fine.
Yeah.
But occasionally we would have musical groups come in. And so, you know, this is musical groups that are mostly built around vocals. And so they have piano and organ, maybe a bass, maybe. But sometimes they would come in and have a drummer. Can you believe it? Right.
Who knew?
And my parents will tell you, the whole world could have stopped, and I'm just transfixed on this drummer, and I don't even know what that is or why that is.
Right.
It's an energy. It's just interesting. By way of comparison. But so anyway, fast forward. My sisters would listen to music in the mornings when and quote unquote secular radio when my parents were at work.
Right.
They're getting ready for school. And blasting KZ-93 in the house, and KZ-93 is playing things like Hungry Like the Wolf, or Do You Really Want to Hurt Me, or you know, songs like this. And I'm like, what is this?
And this is a foreign language.
Yeah. And you know, at the same time, you think when you're that young, you think everybody thinks like me. So you don't think that you're set apart and necessarily to be drawn to this music. And I think all youngsters are kind of drawn to that music, but there was something deeper going on inside of me. And then fast forward again, I think it was when I was turning 16, either 15 or 16, I think 16. I have two older sisters, and the middle one, Rebecca, took me to a concert in Peoria, Illinois to see Petra. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't listen to Petra. I don't, you know, I respect them for what they accomplished. Not all that. I mean, it was a good show. I was drawn to that, but interesting thing. And you and I, again, I don't think you and I have talked about this. An artist opened up for them, and his name was Morgan Cryer.
Oh yes. Yep.
Who in live and on record was a little bit more in the vein of what I was listening to on my own, which was like new wave out of England and just something more interesting than standard rock and roll.
He had the hair.
He had the hair.
There was a look. Yeah.
He had the song, especially recorded. But then when he was live, guess who was his backup band?
You know, there's no way. You're not going to tell me that. I might not be able to talk to you anymore out of just sheer jealousy. Please tell me. Tell me who the backing band was.
It was King's X. Was the backing band for Morgan Cryer. And I remember
you find out later that they recorded that second album with them. Like they were in the rhythm section. They were the backing band for him.
Yeah.
Really? You saw Morgan Cryer with Doug King's Jerry
X.
And Ty.
Yeah. And I didn't know what I was seeing, you know.
Oh my god.
But I remember seeing a guy with a mohawk that was playing bass. And by the way, at the end of the show, I think Morgan Cryer, he like stooped down and Morgan Cryer got on his shoulders and he was spinning around playing bass with Morgan Cryer on his shoulders. And I'm like, what is going on? What is even going on?
You saw King's X before they were King's
X. Yes. And then I go see them years later for the first time at a quote unquote secular show at a bar in Detroit.
Right, at a bar, right.
At the Riff. Yep. And let's see, Eric Gale's band was opening. So come on, what a combination.
Yeah.
I think the next year they toured and the Galactic Cowboys opened for them. The
Galactic Cowboys did that one. Yeah.
But
that's another show. We were probably at the same show and missed each other.
Likely. Absolutely likely. But so I didn't, when I'm watching King's X, in at the Riff, I did not piece it together that was the band that was backing Morgan Cryer. I didn't find out.
Because they didn't sound anything like the Morgan Cryer stuff.
Didn't sound anything like. Nothing. And I was not close enough to the stage to actually recognize them. And I probably wouldn't have anyway.
Well, the lead singer is the one you pay attention to in that setting, right? The name. And then he travels with a bunch of different musicians. That's worth going to a Petro. That's absolutely beyond worth going to a Petro show for.
Oh my gosh. I mean,
I never, we've never had, again, to, it we've was never had this conversation. I never knew that. That's pretty cool.
It was pure gold. But these are just some of the things that shaped, you know, who I am as a musician. Yeah. And it's fascinating. Recently I've gone back and I've, probably 2 years ago, 2.5, I started a podcast and I put it aside and I want to pick it back up and I want to do it with you.
Absolutely.
It's called Tonal Recall. And what it is I started writing music again for this project with Derek and Jeff, and we called it Bang Up State. And it just got me thinking, like, because when I sit down to write a sketch, that part of it comes very easily for me. I can sit down, program a drum beat, and then have a guitar riff fall out of my butt and put a synth to it. And in 15 minutes, I can have a sketch for you. And it just got me thinking, like, where does that even come from? And I mean, part of it is years and years of experience.
Not everybody can do that, by the way.
Yeah. And by the way, it's because, and this is not me patting myself on the back in any stretch of the imagination. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is when it comes so easily, you don't even think about it. Until one day I was actually literally thinking about it and thinking, like, and by the way, every creator is not making something from nothing. So you're basically taking something, some sort of, you're putting together a montage of your experiences, something that you've already experienced in your own life. And then you're taking a piece from here and a piece from here and putting it together, which, by the way, gets back to our discussion about a market like Milwaukee, why musicians around here or markets like this tend to breed really good musicians is because there's so many experiences to go to that yield from and say, I remember when I was at this show and I remember when I was at this show, and then you start putting together a song and it sounds original, and it is, but all originality is a recipe of all the things that you stole from other people.
Well, it sure sounds like the more you pour into your head, the more influences you can draw from. Like, as opposed to somebody that just listens to metal, or just listens to country, or just listens to whatever. If you listen to, as you said, blues, jazz, rock, everything in between, 70s, you know, it's ELO, stuff like that. There's so many different influences that I have, and you and I both have. And certainly coming from a background where we were told not to listen to any of it. Once you open up that door, you can't close it anymore.
Right. And we're all, human nature is to be driven to do the things that you're told not to do. So
when I was a kid, the early Beatles was okay. Cause that was the clean cut stuff. But then the 66 to 70, that was when they grew beards and they got into TM and they got into all kinds of stuff. And so that was the forbidden Beatles. And once I opened Revolver is the magic door to that. Once I opened the door to Revolver and then I started listening to 67 to 70 and everything, all those albums in between, it changed. And I'm pretty sure we had very similar backgrounds. Yeah. I don't know did you do the anti-rock things?
Oh, yes.
Oh my gosh. I went to so many. I tell this in churches. I tell this wherever I can. I went to so many of those anti-rock workshops that I knew all the music. Yeah. I told you that before, right? Like, I was singing along with Hell's Bells during one of the presentations at a church. And there was this elderly couple about two seats over from me. And you could just see them go, man, I'm glad this kid's
here. We're so thankful.
I'm so glad he's I'm so thankful that he's here because he needs to hear this. I'm like, I only know all these songs, The Doors, AC/DC, Madonna. I only know them because I've gone to so many of these workshops that tell me not to listen to them. And the more I listened to them, the more I fell in love with Culture Club.
Oh my gosh. That is such a great story.
Because they kept telling me, get away from this and get rid of it all. And I'm like, where can I get this? How can I, there was no Spotify at the time, but where can I get this music? Because I love it. And thank you, by the way, for scaring me into it.
That's amazing.
Because I had tons of friends that did the typical burning.
Oh, yeah. Thing.
Let's purge all our music. And I'm like, dude, just give it to me. Just give it to me. I'll take it. I'll get rid of it
for
you.
I'll go burn it. I'm starting a service where I burn albums for you. That's amazing. We should write a skit.
Big time. That was my experience. I got turned on to rock music through anti-rock workshop.
You know,
I've actually had the opportunity to tell some of those people that used to do them that's what it did for me. And you could just see the dejection in their face and the utter failure that they feel like. And I'm like, good.
Now I know, Ryan, why you came up with the slogan, "My wife thinks that I'm at Promise Keepers." So, which is a whole other story, but so here's another story that's similar to yours in kind of a way, but I remember when we were at the Nazarene Church, I was probably 11 or 12, probably 12 or 13. Because I was really starting to get interested in music. And we had a Ford LTD and my parents would, after church, of course, the parents are always going to get together with their friends and talk. And I and or my sisters, but I would ask them for the keys and just say, hey, I want to go, hang out in the car. And I would, because Casey Kasem came on with his Top 40 right about the time church was letting out. And that's when I found out about all the juicy, like, I remember so many songs from that time, including, Michael Jackson and by the way, same era. And I don't even know how I got really first introduced to this, but when I was in, I want to say eighth grade and going into my freshman year, I discovered, hip hop. I discovered, especially Run DMC, Houdini,
the classics.
I remember Jam On It. Flash. Yeah, Wiki.
You want to dance all night? Then go one head in, flow on it.
Yes, the OG stuff, like the original, like classic. And so I don't know how. Again, I'm in Cornfield, Illinois.
Right, yes.
I'm a Nazarene young Christian boy. I don't know how and white as they come and uncultured as they come and supposed to stay away from all this stuff. I just don't know how I even got into it, but I got so into it that my parents would go out and try to find empty refrigerator boxes so I could practice breakdancing in the basement. And I actually legitimately became really good at it. So much so that I was like winning contests and teaching at the local dance studios and doing hip hop battles in Peoria, Illinois. And you could not have convinced me when I was in eighth grade that I was not going to grow up and be a professional breakdancer.
I'm very rarely speechless. I am pretty speechless right now.
Beautiful. Just this last weekend or last Thursday, I went down to see my folks because my dad's birthday's coming up, and my mom had these photos and newspaper clippings that she has laminated. And there's newspaper clippings of the local newspaper came by and like I'm on a refrigerator box, cardboard flattened out, and I'm doing a breakdance move.
Patreon, there it is. Yeah. There's our rewards.
Amazing. that is great. That,
you and Vin Diesel. That's awesome.
Yeah, and again, how hip hop even made its way to Central Illinois? I don't know. I just don't know.
It did some kind of Donnie Darko type transference, through the air somehow, and landed. A ship from Krypton and landed and Parliament Funkadelic stepped out. That's how I see it. When we write the screenplay, that's what's going to happen.
That's exactly how it's going to roll out. and then, we've talked about this before, you and I, separately, but like then America did what America does to these trends and just absolutely killed it.
Right.
I remember going into, like a year later, going into a Kmart, and there was this like disc on a end cap that was like, learn how to break dance. And here's all the great, here's the best great, you know, breakdance tracks
right
on the planet, whatever. And
by K-Tel.
And exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And at this point in time, the underground scene that brought it to bear, by the way, none of those artists making any money off of this.
Right.
And they were just like, ugh, like eye roll and moved on. And, you know, hip hop, of course, survived that. But it wasn't until late 80s, early 90s that hip hop artists actually started making money for their craft. Because I don't even think people thought it was a craft then. They just thought it was like mumbo jumbo over a beat that they actually stole.
Yeah.
And it's like I was saying earlier, everything is stolen. Yeah. You know, if you think about an artist that's a painter, they didn't come up with the color yellow. They didn't come up with the color blue. What they're doing, though, is pulling together all of these materials that are available to them along with their experiences and what's in their mind and creating something that is brand new, but it's really just a montage of their experiences.
Of your influences, right?
Yeah.
And the honest artist is going to say, these are influences that I had.
Yeah.
I got frustrated. I live right across from Detroit. And as much as I want to like Greta Van Fleet, because they're a band from Frankenmuth, which that phrase has never been uttered before, a band from Frankenmuth that made it on the national stage that I know of anyway. But they're from Frankenmuth, Michigan, and they would do interviews and say, well, we really had never heard of Led Zeppelin before. And I'm like, you're lying. There's no way. Be honest enough to say, yeah, they were an influence of ours and they influenced what we did. But when they turned around and said, well, we Led Zeppelin, who are they? It was like, that was the tone of the interviews. And it was like, no, just own up to your influences and move on.
Yeah.
You know, I am who I am because of what I listen to and what I allowed into my brain, but don't shy away from that.
Yeah. I was trying to find, by the way, 100%. And you know, it's funny. I think young artists in particular, you ask them, okay, who do you sound like? Well, we don't sound like anybody. We're original. You know, I was that artist when I was a kid. And now I'm like, okay, I realize I sound like everybody that I've ever listened to altogether. But anyway, there's this quote from Steve Jobs that says, creativity is just connecting things. When you ask creative people how they did something, they feel a little guilty because they didn't really do it. They just saw something. It seemed obvious to them after a while, you know? So you're taking the local craft brewery scene here in Milwaukee. Beer is not new. Beer is not new.
Right. Yeah.
But
it wasn't just invented last year.
But pistachio cream beer is new. Yep. Who has done that? And it's basically people are saying, we know about beer and we know that kind of nutty flavors taste good in food and drinks. What do you say we try this? And that's exactly what musicians are doing all the time.
And they've got the freedom to do that.
Yeah.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
There have been times when I have felt angry and cheated by my upbringing because we were kind of in a bubble and restricted from, you know, because I would get into later high school and my friends had been, had grown up on like Cat Stevens and Led Zeppelin and all these cool acts. And I'm just like, even Bob Marley, I mean, everybody. And I would just be kind of jealous. Like, I don't even, you guys are all speaking a foreign language.
Exactly. Yeah.
What about Petra? You guys heard them? You know, like nobody wants to hear that, you know? So
got the new Mike Warnke record.
Oh, no. He went there. Ooh, he went there.
I did go there. I did go there.
But no, I, you know, the thing is, thankfully we're far enough along and first of all, I'm far enough along in my independence to listen to whatever I want. And now we have such great music coming out now, and we have the entire catalog of the entire world on Spotify and Apple Music.
Absolutely.
It's a good time.
It is a very good time.
I've been going back recently.
And to own up your inspiration.
That's right. And you know, so I'm doing this bluesy sound, and I recently was like remembered, like I have always loved Everlast. So I've gone back to listen to some of his stuff, and it's starting to like, I'm letting it influence me right now in my current writing. And I'm like, man, that, and by the way, some of that came up because there was this podcast. What's it called? Party People. I think I'll send you a link, but, the host was interviewing Everlast, and there were so many stories he was talking about. I had no clue. I grew in my respect for him, and I already respected him so much.
Now
I didn't even know there was some of these other acts that he's been a part of called Costa Ropa or Coca Ropa. Have you heard of this?
Okay.
Huh. Oh my gosh. It feels like something that came out of early 90s rap, and it's perfect.
Wow.
Nice. And partially violent and kind of dark, but I love all of it. But anyway, Everlast is on that, but even his like acoustic stuff where he puts a beat underneath it and it's kind of bluesy. I'm like, you know, I'm writing songs and I go back and listen to him now and I'm like, there's no way I could not say that.
Sure,
he didn't.
Exactly. Me. Yep.
No, it's clear. No. It's clear.
Well,
and he's written songs that I wish I wrote.
Well, there's in Rattle and Hum in the U2 film. There's a scene where B.B. King is sitting down with Bono. And he looks at Bono and he says, "Son, you're too young to be writing lyrics this good," or something to stop the paraphrasing. And so that was my intro to Leader Dogs. And I hear Martin's Dream. Okay. So musically, sonically, it's amazing. It's blowing the roof off. It's awesome. And I listen to the lyrics of Martin's Dream and I hear, "We did not end division. We only moved the line." And I had that moment. I literally remember thinking about Bono and B.B. King sitting there. And I had this moment where I was like, "Son, you're too young to be writing lyrics like this." How did you, as a white guy from mid Illinois, write a lyric that was, "We did not end division, we only moved the line"? And so when we were talking, and I remember there were a couple of artists I was talking to at different points because there was a lot going on in Detroit. And what made me immediately gravitate towards what you were doing was as much lyrically as it was music. And that was one lyric that I could not get. I still, to this day, can't get out of my brain because it's more relevant now. That lyric is more relevant now than it was 25 years ago. "We did not end division. We only moved the line," because I'm surrounded by people that are like, we elected a black president, so we're over this, right? We've made it. We accomplished what we said we were going to do. And it's like, there's certain elements that are hard to relate to somebody who doesn't understand what's really going on, right? Or doesn't understand the perspective and doesn't really want to care to understand my perspective. And then I hear that and I'm like, this guy gets it from a lyrical standpoint. "We did not end division." Again, I keep saying it. "We did not end division. We only moved the line" is such a mature lyric that I don't even know if you understood how mature that lyric was when you wrote it.
And it culminates with, "It's still a dream to live in a place for every kind."
Right. One of the things I want to do with what I'm doing is I want to talk to the people that are in their 70s and 80s right now that still remember separate bathrooms. They still remember sitting in the balcony of a movie theater before they're gone, because we need to have those stories on record so that we don't forget them, because it wasn't that long ago. And I find that experience ties in exactly to what you said with Martin's Dream.
That's so powerful. Yeah. So, there's a few things that rush to my memory that probably led to that lyric. One is I have to start with an embarrassment. So I'm living in Pekin, Illinois as a kid. Yep. For the misfortune of Pekin, Illinois, there was a lot of KKK activity there in the 50s and 60s. Right. In fact, there was a billboard apparently in the 60s that said "Out of Town by Sundown."
Wow.
And this isn't the
Deep South. This is Pekin, Illinois.
Pekin, Illinois. Yeah. I mean, Richard Pryor just down the street is in Peoria, you know, cutting his teeth as a comedian. And this is in Pekin, Illinois, literally like 5 miles from where he probably grew up.
Yeah. In your lifetime. Or in the early 50s and 60s.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And so as a young man, now my parents didn't pick that area because of that. They just picked that area of whatever. So I'm going to school and I'm only surrounded. Again, when you're young, you think everybody thinks like you. And so you don't know things until you learn the hard way. And one thing I learned the hard way, I remember coming home from school one day and I had heard a black joke at school. Now, at this time in my life, there were black jokes, Polish jokes, blonde jokes. Right. I think blonde jokes were coming, but they were kind of like, you know, but definitely black jokes with plenty of the N word. Yes. And how do you know when an N does or whatever?
Yeah.
So I hear a joke and I am old enough to know why stereotypically that's funny. Sure. And I come home from school. I think it was sixth grade. I tell my mom this joke and she just looked at me and without a lot of judgment, but she just said, you know, Lyndon, every human being has a soul.
Hmm.
And that, I don't even think she doesn't even remember
sure,
that.
Yeah.
That had such a profound effect on me that because as a young boy, especially going to church and understanding why Jesus was here, and then for her to say that, I felt like I let everybody down when I said that joke.
Right.
When, by the way, took all the wind out of my sail because I was prepared for my mom to just laugh and slap her knee.
Sure. Yeah.
Instead, she was like, she didn't scold me.
Right.
She just said in a very,
she called you out on it.
Serious and like just a serious tone. She just said, hey, that's not okay, basically.
But she also did it in love, right?
Complete. Yeah. There's no question.
Yeah.
So a couple years later, I wish I could find it. But a couple years later, about 3 years later, I wrote a poem called The N Word.
Okay.
And it's basically kind of came around to, you know, like that whole idea of, I wish I never knew you, N Word. But in hindsight, that's an immature thought because it does exist.
Right.
And the right thing to do is to not erase it and say, I'm colorblind, because that just says, hey, Ryan, I'm just going to erase your background just because and by the way, I think people usually speaking say that out of heartfelt intent.
Absolutely.
But again, it's coming from a position of privilege and you just don't realize at the time what that implies for the other person.
Right. Yeah.
So again, all of my upbringing, I'm in white cornfield, white America. Mm-hmm. I think I graduated with the first African American that graduated from our high school. And by the way, our graduating class was like 400 to 500 strong every year. So to have the very first African American coming up in 1987 is just ridiculous.
And when you're that kid and the jokes are going around, you just sit and laugh because there's no other choice.
Yeah. I mean, hats off.
Yeah.
It just
kind of smirk and take it all in because.
And you know, kids are so cruel anyway. Kids are cruel to each other when they look like.
Anybody's different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So then I moved to Michigan and I start working and going to school and working up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to work at this manufacturing plant, which I won't mention, but at the time it totally dawned on me. And this is not black and white. This is all diversity. I had women who were in management and project managers. I had women who were like supervisors and group leaders on the floor. We had people from there was, you look across the manufacturing floor and every, it seemed like every nationality was represented in there. Sure, and that, yeah. And that, that's when it, I mean, it's so sad to say, but at 21, that's, you know, the first time you have exposure, you realize we're all in this together. And right. I will be honest with you. It's even in recent podcasts, like from the Liturgist, their episode on Black and White is so profound. And there were things I learned from that I didn't realize I was a part of. Because again, why would a person in a place of privilege choose to go figure out where are the dark parts? Where's the shadows in my background? You know, when you start to understand what systemic racism actually is.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, and I'm just going to go on record as saying this, but I know a lot of people who would say, like what you just already said, which is, by the way, slavery is over. We've already had a black president. Why can't you guys just go get a job?
Get over it.
Get a job. And you know, I'm not going to feel sad for you because this isn't 100 years ago. And then, and then you realize if you go back 300 to 400 years, whites had these privileges and were getting getting money from the government to go and start businesses and start farms and start and send their kids to school. And
right.
And so to just say one day, okay, slavery's over, does not all of a sudden create equality. It's like the people who just came out of slavery now have no history of education. They have no experience of going onto a campus and being taught, you know, from the world scholars of yesteryear. While in the current market, everybody is white and male and leading.
right. Yeah. Yeah. And my take on that in general, because I have a very thick skin when it comes to people misunderstanding or one of the courses I teach is cultural understanding. And I say, look, everybody's got to develop a thick skin to be able to have somebody come up to them and say, hey, why do you do this? And to be that candid, and have the freedom to do that too, because you're going to ask dumb questions. It's just, if you're trying to understand another culture, which I hope everybody would try to do, you're going to ask questions that might be offensive but if the tone of it's not offensive, but more, I really want to know, people understand that. And hopefully people will give each other the grace to do that. But it's one of those things that my take on it is the only way you're going to see it, if you're in a position of privilege, that you're going to see what it's like to be treated from the other side, is by having people in your life, not just people that you work with, but people that you are in fellowship with, that you are actually true friends, having meals together of different cultures. And then you will see what happens. Yeah. I remember my son was going, they were all going to a show. It was like the Corn Fest, and they were all, he was going with a bunch of his buddies. He was the only black one in the group. And they carted my son up and down. He was 22. They wanted proof of this, proof of that. These are just the people that are working at the gate to make sure that he, you know, if he's going to have a drink, that he's going to be legal and all that kind of stuff. And they went through everything. And his buddy behind him, he had his ID out ready to show because he just saw what happened to Joe. And the person that was working it said, oh, no, I know you. You're good. And let him in. Wow. And my friend's buddy said, is that what it's like? He's like, my son's buddy said, is that what it's like? And he's like, he had a picture now in his head of what it means to be treated differently in front of everybody and publicly embarrassed, really. But he wouldn't have understood that as well if he hadn't been in that moment and went, I got my ID ready to go. Oh, I don't need it. Oh, okay. So it's the only way you're ever going to see it is if you have people in your life from different cultures. And so that's one of the things I strongly encourage, is not just people that you work with, actually hang out with, be deliberate about getting to people, know people from completely different backgrounds. And you'll see it, and it won't take long before you see it.
You know, that's so profound, Ryan. And again, it's a tricky place to be in because I'm not saying woe is us and please have sympathy on us. I'm just saying, when you are born into an all white community, and you've never had exposure, it's not until you've had exposure that you can begin to have empathy and understand.
Exactly.
And
you've got to want to have it.
Something that blew me away was when I listened to that Black and White episode from the Liturgists. Science Mike was talking, and he brought something to light that I have never even considered, and it makes so much sense to me. And it has, again, profoundly changed me. And this is probably just like early last year that I heard this. But, you know, we grow up in the Christian community. We're reading the Bible. We're reading the New Testament. And we are, we find ourselves thinking that we are the Jews. We're the ones that are persecuted, right?
Right, yeah.
And when Science Mike brought this to light, it just... Again, it was almost like my mom looking at me again and saying, everybody has a soul. But he basically said, because I live in America and because I'm a white male, I'm the Roman in that story. I am not the Jew.
Right.
And that is, I don't know why it took, you know, being this as old as I am to hear that and see that and to piece that together.
Yeah.
But like, it's so fascinating to me that racism, systemic racism in America has largely been bolstered and built up on the Bible.
Yes.
When in fact, what was actually, it's contrary to what is actually going on there.
The essence of the gospel contradicts that completely.
Yeah. Like be good to the people in be good to everybody, but be good to the people in the margins.
Yep.
Meanwhile, we're using it to justify because it has language in there that somehow loosely was translated to slaves and masters, which is not even close to what slavery looked like in America.
Right.
But Jesus wasn't white.
Right. Yes.
wasn't a white guy.
Yeah.
Like I've thought about making big, you know, t-shirts with huge lettering that says that, like, Jesus was not white.
Right.
So to be in America and to sit on your pedestal and to look at a black person and say, go get a job and say that you're a Christian is so contrary. I just got to believe that Jesus came back right now. He would be like, well, anyway.
Yeah. You're doing it.
Let him judge. That's right.
He's actually pretty good.
Fairly capable.
No, it is. But on the same side, somebody like me has to give people the grace to get there. Right.
It takes both. There's a dance that has to happen. And
you can't have a hair trigger. You can't have, you know, what did you say? What? It's more like, well, tell me why you thought that way. Or tell me why you thought that term was okay when it's kind of offensive or really offensive.
Yeah.
But you have to have the grace to allow people the ability to mess up.
Yeah, because you know, and it's contextual too, right? Because if I had gone to a friend when I was 11 or 12 and said the joke and they said, you know, everybody has a soul, it wouldn't have had the impact and I probably would have been like mad, right? But for my mom,
when you said it, I feel like you remembered the exact tone, the exact context, everything about that moment. Like that was an arresting moment for you.
It was a pivotal moment in my up. It was like part of my coming of age. And my mom said, and for my mom to say it from a point of love, she wasn't cracking down on me. I didn't get in trouble. She wasn't like disciplining me. She just said in a heartfelt way, in a serious tone. And that was all it took. And for my mom to say it and for me to have that respect for her and for her to point that out to me was like, oh, you know, and again,
she,
so it's
she set contextual. You on an alternate timeline. She really did.
Yep. She really did.
Huh?
She really did. Wow. So anyway, That's amazing. So many of the lyrics on, by the way, to speak about lyrics, and I know we're going long here, but to speak about lyrics for a second, I remember, and I don't know why this happens. You know, this is one of those things where you one day make a decision and you don't know why you made it, but you just stick by it. But when I was young, I didn't start playing guitar till I was 17. And at the time, rock and roll was, of course, huge, especially in Central Illinois. And the guitar players were a dime a dozen, literally. And it seemed like the ones that got all the notoriety or everybody was talking about were the ones that had like blazing speed, you know. But because guitarists were a dime a dozen, it just to me felt like plug and play, like interchangeable. Like, well, you know, Mark can't go out on tour with us because his mom got mad at him or whatever. So now we're just going to bring Tony in because he can play just as fast or whatever.
Right. Yeah. We can replace him.
So I decided it's for some reason at an early age that if I'm going to spend time honing a craft, it's going to be actually songwriting and in particular lyrics, because again, you can plug and play an instrumentalist here and there, but a good song, it creates an experience. It takes four minutes of blank space and turns it into a mood, or it tells you a
takes
story.
You somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And I don't know, again, what compelled me to do that. I was drawn early on to good lyricists. Thankfully, around that time, great lyricists were coming out, even in the music I was allowed to listen to. Like I would hear Charlie Peacock. I would hear some of them escape me now. Even Rich Mullins. I mean, some of his lyrics were so creative and profound.
Oh, absolutely.
Meanwhile, as I'm listening more and more to quote unquote secular music, I'm hearing things out of like from Chris Cornell, who wrote so ambiguously and creatively that you really couldn't tell what he was saying. And I kind of went after that a little bit with some of my Leader Dogs, like when I was starting to write for Leader Dogs.
That makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. He didn't write from any particular vantage point, but he wrote some pretty universal stuff while still maintaining his street cred as a, you know, grunge band from the 90s.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
like I said, for him to cover Billie Jean and make it his own, when that is all the iconic songs in the world, when I DJ'd, if you put on Billie Jean, people are on the floor.
Yep.
Like that. You can't say that about most songs out there, but that is, if there's one iconic song that's out there, that's one. And then when he did his take on that and he made that somehow his own, I went, oh my God, my respect for him just went through the roof.
Yeah. That's a true.
Because you don't cover U2. You don't cover Michael Jackson.
No. We stay away from these things as artists. But you know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So as a songwriter, I can write a song, musically speaking. I can create a track, a bed track for you in an hour to two hours tops. I will spend 2 weeks to 2 months writing lyrics because it's a craft, and I want it to, I want the person who does give a crap about lyrics, and that's not everybody. Some people just want to hear a good song or a good beat.
I think there's more than we think.
I do too,
to be honest.
And sometimes when it finally dawns on them, they're like, "Ooh, that's that." But to me, the lyric is the more creative. This sounds judgmental, but it's just harder. It's harder work. There's more creativity involved. Yeah. To be a poet is, in my opinion, almost anybody can go pick up a guitar and probably learn five or six chords and play some rock and roll. But it's rare. You could take the same 100 guitarists, and to narrow it down to the actual songwriters, you might be down to two or three or four.
And it also obviously requires a study of song structure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, beginning and how to do the middle. There've been so many bands that I've seen that I thought had real potential, but they didn't know how to end a song. They didn't know where to put the chorus, like just simple things that you have to go back and understand. If you're going to know your craft.
Yeah. And you know, with Leader Dogs in particular, we didn't have a live band. We weren't playing out live. I felt like it was an opportunity for me to say something of significance, and without really much pushback, because again, we weren't a live band. We weren't out, it was not like people would be able to come up to me after a concert and say, you know, that lyric kind of offended me, but that was the first, those were the first lyrics I wrote, having experienced like King's X and like Soundgarden and, some of the great music that came out of that era. And so that was I squeezed it all out of me. And honestly, when I was done with that record, Ryan, I literally had the thought, like, I don't know if I could write a song again, because I just poured it all into that. I did want to step on people's toes and challenge them with things like, because white Christendom in America in particular, I think they often say, oh, you know, like, okay, that's a layup. We're done with racism. What's the next topic? Let's move on. And it's like, no.
Yeah, right, right. Let's move on.
No, there's still so much. There's still so much here. And so I wrote that. So anyway.
Art provokes.
Art provokes.
That is the purpose. That is one of the purposes. But that is one of the key purposes of art, is that it should provoke.
And inspiration inspires.
Inspiration. Oh, I like that one too. That's good. There's so many songs that you've written that I just fully horize. You've written the Moon,
yeah.
And which is available now, right? The Moon is available now. And what's coming next?
So I started with the Moon, and for some reason I got onto this idea of what if I wrote one called the Sun, and then I was like, well, then I'd have to write the Stars. So I've finished a song here recently called the Stars. For years I've wanted to do a solo sound. I have finally whittled down my palette enough to, because I have so many interests and so many styles of music that I love, but I've decided to go with a bluesy kind of guitar sound because that's what I cut my teeth on as a guitarist. Mm-hmm. And with an electronic bed for a few reasons. One is because I don't need a band, then I can program it. And then two, I just absolutely love it. And I love the when something cold and electronic comes together with something warm and humid.
And you know what I call that when your style in particular, and I don't know very many people, if hardly any, that do things the way you do, which is really cool. I call it veer left. That there's a point in your song where you go, okay, this is where the song's going. And then you take it left. And I go, okay, now that stands out more to me. And again, this carries through your body of work. There's always a point in the song where you think it's going to go here because every other song would go here, and you take it just slightly to the left, and it makes it more interesting and more memorable. and it makes you say, I got to go back and listen to that again. Like, I don't know if you ever wrote a song that I had that I only listened to once and went, yeah, I'm good. That's all I need to hear.
Yeah.
It's like, I got
that one figured out.
And certainly it's your style, but I don't know anybody else that does it quite the way you do. So again, when you asked me to work with you in the first place, it was like, I see tons of potential. I see tons of artistry, and I'm a lyric guy. I like digging into a good lyric.
You are.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I can tell that by the catalog of artists that you listen to. But, you know, the reason I was chuckling is because when you said that, it reminded me, I had a band called Middle of the Dream in the late 2000s, so 2009, 2010. And I was writing some songs one day with Christy, the singer, and I was playing this chord progression, and I came across this chord, and she could tell, like, my face lit up, and she was like, that chord shouldn't work. And I was like, and that's why we're going to use it.
and we're sticking with it.
That's rock and roll, though. It's like you know enough theory to know, okay, here's the rule, and then you're like, how do we break that? And there's, you know, that if rock and roll can't push the limits and break the rules, then it's not rock and roll. It just starts to get real stifling.
And the anomaly is that every band that makes it, the label, all they want them to do is replicate that and just keep replicating that for the rest of your career. And so when you have an artist, again, we keep going back to Chris Cornell, who's willing to work with different producers and put out different things that people freaked out about because it wasn't the same as it was the last time. It's like, that's what I want my artist to do. I want you to take me somewhere different than you did on the last
time.
But there's only a handful of people that really feel that way.
That's true.
To some degree, but we'll find them.
But to finish the answer, really, for what you were saying, I have been inspired to, for the first time, publish under my own name instead of under a band name. I've decided to just go with this sound that if you listen to the Moon, you're basically listening to the menu of the sound that I'm going to be going after. And it's chill. Right. I write around my vocal style. But it's bluesy guitar, it's electronics, and I hope well-written and well-crafted lyrics. And I plan to do, an EP by July, which is going to be the Sun, the Moon, and the Stars, and probably a cover, probably, Enjoy the Silence by Depeche Mode. And then,
oh yeah.
And then after that, I mean, partly I'm digging back into songs I wrote since Lemonade that were either part of bands that just never really went anywhere. But I, you know, when you've crafted a lyric, it's like, if it's well done, it stands the test of time. So I'm reaching back and doing some of those and also writing just some new stuff. Nice. So excited to see where
you're
it goes.
And you're geographically in a place that's going to be open. You're going to have lots of outlets and lots of places to be able to play out and get people on board with what you're doing. So yeah, that's what I love. That's what I love about the Moon. The Moon basically says, here's where we're going. You want to go with me?
Yep.
Let's do it. Yep. The magical mystery tour to some degree.
Yeah, I love that.
Absolutely.
I like that analogy.
Did we cover everything? Everything. How can people find you? What's the best way to find you for your solo?
So, and that's a good question. And then it's something that you and I need to talk about actually, okay. Right? But so basically right now while I'm working on this EP, I'm also going to kind of finish my website, lyndonperry.com. I've had one for a couple of years and I just haven't really done anything with it, but now I'm going to brand it. But the music is available anywhere that you can stream music, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, all the majors. Yeah. If you just search for my name, Lyndon Perry, don't search for the Moon, because there's probably a bazillion songs called that, but search for my name. And then I'm on social media, but I will say that the best probably way path to that probably in the next month will be through my website, because I'm trying to decide, do I, you know, use my personal Instagram and Twitter and bring people along, or do I just start a new one called Lyndon Perry Music and kind of do a fresh start? So anyway, these are things that you and I will talk about, but easiest way to find the music is just to search for Lyndon Perry on the place where you find music. And then easiest way to find me online is probably just lyndonperry.com.
Perfect. So thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Ryan. This has been a lot of fun.
Always.
Peace.
Barrister.